your voice is heard with Yehala Voice. One community, one hand, one voice. The Arab voice is heard with Yehala Voice.
حنجره ذهبيه
ايه في عربي في الراديو هين بالسياره في شيكاغو
طوت الى الزمن الجميل زمان العمالقه والفن الحق
الو
ايوه الحكي يا مرا بقولوا عربي بالراديو بيحكوا عربي
مين هذول اللي بيحكوا عربي
هون بالراديو بيحكوا عربي على يا هلا بقولوا اسمهم يا هلا وهون في شيكاغو
انت وين هالكيت
انا بالسياره مروح من الشغل في ميشيغان افينيو جنب الميلينيوم بارك هذا بالسياره وما بفتح على الراديو الا بسمعهم بيحكوا عربي اسمهم يا هلا من 1450 من شيكاغو
يا حج من وين بده يجي الراديو العربي في امريكا وفي شيكاغو وعلى اي ام ومن السياره كمان والله زودتها
ايش يعني بتقول اني خرفنت والله يا هلا 1450 من شيكاغو على الاي ام هيني بسمعهم بالسياره ومش مصدقتيني خذي اسمعي
يا هلا بالضيف ضيف الله احسب الروح اي والله يا هلا بالضيف ضيف الله احسب الروح اي والله ما نرضى تروح من عنا ما نرضى تروح لا والله ما نرضى تروح لا والله يا هلا بالضيف
ضيف الله
أحسب الروح
اي والله
ما نرضى تروح
من عندنا
ما نرضى تروح لا والله ما نرضى تروح لا والله
يا هلا بالضيف ضيف الله أحسب الروح اي والله ما نرضى تروح من عندنا ما نرضى
Now you are listening to Talk of the Town.
Talk of the Town
with Ray Hanania. Talk of the Town brought to you by LifeRun Medical Alert Systems.
And good afternoon. I'm Ray Hanania, and this is Talk of the Town radio broadcast live on YahalaVoice.com radio and on WCEV 1450 AM radio. It's Friday, October 3rd. Our producer is Khalid, and if you want to share your opinion, we want to hear it. Our telephone call-in line is 708-321-1313. Talk of the Town is brought to you by LifeRun Medical Alert Systems, the best emergency system for seniors and people in healthcare need available today. 1-800-421-3366. We're broadcast live every Friday at 4 p.m. and also rebroadcast on Mondays at 11 a.m. You can go to thearabdailynews.com to get information on the show and listen to podcasts of past shows. And you can also download the podcast of the show from iTunes. Make sure to friend us on Facebook, also Radio Chicagoland, Yahala Voice, and Ray Hanania. Tomorrow's the Eid al-Adha, the big holiday, the festival of the sacrifice. So we want to wish all of our Muslim friends Eid Mubarak. It's a big day and very respectful for all of those the Islamic religion and all our Muslim friends. And coincidentally, tomorrow is also Yom Kippur. And, of course, my wife and son are Jewish, so it's a big holiday for them. I got all the bases covered, Khalid. I got them all covered. So for them, for our Jewish friends, we wish them a solemn Yom Kippur, Gemar Hatima Tova to our Jewish friends. This week, we're going to be talking with Chicago Alderman Bob Fioretti. He's running for mayor of Chicago, and I like this guy, and I hope he gets elected. And I know that people are going to say, well, you're being unfair. You're already I don't care. I've known him forever. He was a corporation counsel and attorney at the city of Chicago for a long time, and he was elected alderman in Chicago, born and raised on the South Side. His name's Italian-American, but he's also Polish-American, a big Polish-American vote in Chicagoland. It's a huge population. I hope they all come out and support him. I want to welcome him. We have him on the line now. Bob, thank you very much for calling us on the radio. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Ray. Great to be here on the Talk of the Town.
And tell us, listen, you've been in city government for a long time. You know how tough it is to run for mayor. But tell us a little bit about why you want to run for mayor. What's moving you to become mayor of Chicago?
Well, I'm running for mayor because really, I love this city, and I think this city can no longer afford the leadership that divides us and ignores the needs and struggles of the majority of this city. You know, when Rahm came into town 4 years ago, he said he was going to get tough, but all we got was really tough luck. And I hear from Chicagoans, even before I decided to make the run, that we need a mayor who represents us, the people. We need a mayor who listens to us and fights for us. And I've been doing that as an alderman, and I know I will do that as a mayor here of this city. And I think the people of this city deserve really nothing less than someone who's going to listen to them and fight for them, and I'm going to be that mayor.
And that alone is one reason why I'll try to move back into Chicago as soon as I can to vote for you. But I got 50 relatives that live in Chicago. I'm going to get all of them to vote for you. But that's
all right,
the
we better get them all there.
They're going to, believe me, they're all going to be there. And there are a lot of American Arabs. And by the way, I'm not asking you to get involved with the Middle East conflict. You don't have to take sides. This is about Chicago politics. It's about diversity. And Chicago is ethnically rich. And when Rahm Emanuel was elected, the first thing he did was he shut the American Arabs out of his government. He just locked the door. Rich Daley had a great relationship with us, all the past mayors, but he just won't talk to us and a few others. To me, that's a big issue, and the fact that you're willing to come on an American Arab radio program, talk about what's important to Chicago, that's a big deal in my community, and I know our residents who live in Chicago are going to support you just for doing that, so thank you for that. It seems like a no-brainer, right? I mean,
it is, and I know he either dismantled or he completely ignored the Arab Advisory Council that was in existence, and I do want to reconstitute that and put it back because I think we need to listen to him. But probably in July or August, one thing you may not know, the first set of folks that I really sat down and talked to was the Arab American Patrolmen's Association, and I listened to their concerns. Yes, and they were great, and we had breakfast together on the southwest side. They had about 30 of the folks there from the department, and I listened to their concerns and problems and how to have more diversity in our police force here, and therefore really not just our police department but in all the departments across the city.
And just a reminder, listeners, we're talking with Bob Fioretti. He's a Chicago alderman, and he's running for mayor of Chicago. You know, Bob, that is probably the most important thing to do. Nobody's asking you to endorse what we want or do this or do that. A lot of times it's just, hey, will you listen to us? Let common sense decide what's right or wrong, but you got to hear it, right?
That's exactly. If you don't have everybody's opinions, you really are a failure as a leader here in this city. And you can always follow what happens, but you really have to lead. And how do you lead? By listening to everybody's opinions. You said it at one point. We are a city rich in diversity, and it's
right.
A great city, and we need to keep encompassing that, embracing that, and having everyone realize that this is such a diverse city. I think in our Chicago public schools, we speak over 190 languages.
It's amazing. I mean, that's what makes Chicago so phenomenal. And for him to walk away from it was a little surprising to me. I'd been a reporter covering City Hall for 17 years. I remember, I think I was correct, right? You were a corporation counsel there for a long time.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You know the issues then. You know the issues that face Chicagoans. What's the biggest issue that people in Chicago want? What would be the top three things that you think they really need attended to?
Well, there are a lot of issues, but as you said, the top three probably in somewhat of an order as I'm hearing it throughout the communities, crime becomes number one. Education is really the second, and then I will call it development generally, but how we get jobs into our communities. And so those are the three most important issues.
And you know, obviously, you know, I do media relations, and I get a lot of suburban clients. Not in Chicago. I used to do a lot of political consulting in Chicago. But one thing I learned was when suburban communities can get their community to come out on the street and celebrate, like during the summer months, show a presence, street gang members don't like that. They can't stand it when people come out of their house. They love it when people hide in the house, when they're afraid. You know, if when you get into office, you know, Alderman, I hope that maybe you'll remember that and see it. There's got to be a way to get people to stand up, come out of their homes, and just, you know, they don't have to become policemen, but street gang members do not like to see neighborhoods active.
No, and that's correct. That's why I really believe not only do we need more officers out on the street, but we really need a holistic approach to making our streets safe. And among those is a good community policing, block clubs, reinvigorating those type of systems out there, and dealing with crime. And we need to put people to work and reopen a lot of our mental health clinics. And I think all of that will help combat the crime problem that we have here in the city.
Now, you've been in the city council for a number of years, and you've worked with, you know, the mayor. I mean, has he been responsive to the different problems? I mean, why should, you know, when obviously it's important to tell people why they should support you, but, and we're not being negative by saying why should people not support an incumbent mayor? I mean, what did Rahm Emanuel not do that would justify him not getting reelected?
Well, I think there's several issues there that, as you tie it up and you ask that question, because I think from the educational point of view, you know, the closure of the 51 school buildings that we have there that are now standing empty in addition to the other ones on the south and west sides, that really hurts our cities. We've got 30,000 students that have been displaced going from schools outside of their own communities. And these type of conditions have really created learning conditions that I know the mayor wouldn't tolerate for his own family.
Right.
And I say that, earlier today I met with a principal, at one of our high schools, and all of the kids are coming from a farther distance, and I mean, miles from the far south side to, the near, into Bronzeville. And that has caused serious problems. And there's no, let's see, how can I best tell it in a few moments, my hour-plus discussion with the principal today. But it's created way too many problems in terms of people interacting. And we don't hear about that in the media, but that's a major problem that the school closures have caused. And we need to be focusing on building our neighborhoods by building good community schools, putting the resources into them, and at the same time, making sure we have great teachers that are in those schools.
And it seems to me that, you know, you empty out how many schools? 31 schools. These buildings
51.
Are now 51 schools. Yeah. They're abandoned, right? Basically, I mean,
right.
What are you?
Right.
That's not good for a neighborhood. I'd hate to live in a neighborhood where you got a big empty building. It's like a sign to, you know, the street gangs that this neighborhood's falling apart. I mean, that's probably not a smart thing to do.
And not only that, what you see is happening now after a year of almost the schools being closed, small businesses in and around where those schools were are also closing. You know, the kids would spend, whether it's 50 cents or a couple of dollars a day at a store, and no longer
right.
are spending it. Those stores are being boarded up right now.
Well, what happened to that big idea you had about bringing fresh vegetables and stuff into the neighborhoods? I mean, when he first ran, it sounded like, okay, maybe he's going to, change things. And I'm sure that you were probably hopeful, like everybody else, that, you know, there are a lot of things that Chicago faces. And, I haven't seen any, you know, the change has seemed worse. It's not better.
And you're right. I think a lot of us, whoever we voted for, 3-4 years ago, soon to be, we thought that there was going to be change here in the city. But what we see is the same kind of, policies and really a lot more going towards the, a very limited set of folks and of an agenda being set. An agenda being controlled by big banks and big corporations, a lot of privatization across the board, and all this is impacting on our citizens here. And who's being left out? The neighborhoods and people that live in the neighborhoods.
Now, when you've been around for a long time, when did you first get into government in Chicago?
07, I was elected the in 07 and under the Daley years, and then this is my second mayor that I served under, one term under each.
And then before that, you were at the Corporation Counsel's office for
yes.
Since when did that start? When did you first?
Oh boy, you're dating me on that one.
Well,
how about 79?
See, that was right about when I got in there in 1977. So you got there right when Jane Byrne came in as mayor. When you look at all the mayors, is it possible to talk about which mayor you like the most? Or, you know, there is a lot of controversy and news with all of them, but I'm wondering, do you have a mayor that you really thought, you know, this mayor did their best or tried to do their best? When you look back, can you pick one, or is that unfair?
Well, you know, I think when you look at both, you know, when you say Jane Byrne and Harold Washington, they were 24 hours a day workers.
They were.
Both of them loved this city. It wasn't handed to them, the mayoralship.
Right.
They fought hard for it, and they both reached out to a lot of communities. Harold Washington, everybody was, a lot of people were fearful on the north side and some parts of the west side. But, you know, he embraced everybody, and he went, and he tackled the problems. I think if he would have gone into another term after that, we would have been a different city today than we would ever have seen before.
His passing probably really denied Chicago a great future, I think, when he died. You know, in the beginning of his second term, you're absolutely right. And Rich Daley is a good guy. I mean, he's a nice guy, but after a while, it became like, you know, I don't want to say a machine, but it was like he didn't seem like really interested. I mean, how does a mayor walk away from the job too? I've never ever met a mayor that did that other than him. And I'm not trying to be mean to him, because I think you're right. I think that if you were to look back at the mayors, Jane Byrne and Harold Washington rolled up their sleeves, and whatever the controversies surrounding Jane Byrne, Harold Washington, all the mayors are all the same. They were 24/7. They were mayors all the time. Nothing happened without them being there. Is that the kind of mayor you're hoping to be, a 24/7 mayor in Chicago?
I will be the 24/7. I think I'm a 24/7 alderman. I'm on call almost all the time, and if I'm not on call, you know, this job, when I was, you know, they say, well, you can do all these other things and this and that, and it's a part-time job. If you really take your job seriously, it's a 60-plus hour a day, hour a week job, minimum. And, you know, you sacrifice time on other matters, but you have to give it all from dealing with, if you're going to be open with your constituents. You know, I have a ward night on Mondays. I also have a legal night. And ward night, we deal with all the folks and listen to their concerns, and we try to address them and try to find and work with the people to find solutions. Same thing on, I've got a group of lawyers that comes in twice a month on Tuesday nights, the second and fourth Tuesday of the month, to deal with legal problems. I mean, my ward was very, it crossed a lot of boundaries, and when I was elected, it was a majority African-American ward, and it from Bronzeville all the way to the west, south loop, west loop, all the way to the far west side, the medical district included, Lawndale, East Garfield Park, and people have serious concerns, and they have serious issues. I've also put together every 6 months another job fair, and we have put together and put people to work from those job fairs. I don't like them ever to be beauty contests where, oh yes, you know, you get out there and you prospective employer shows up just to have a booth there. Well, you know, you need to be hiring people. And at the same time, I had 35 interns out of a state grant that I found this year, and we put those kids to work. We went to museums though with them. We helped identify things that should be problem areas both in the second ward that I serve now and in the prospective second ward in 2015, from graffiti to you name it. And we found the kids themselves in the month of July with my staff and supervisors took down 1,100 hits of graffiti in the month of July. So we instill public service. On the 18th of this month, I have Green and Clean that's going on in both wards, the new and the old, and to clean up and make sure before we head into winter that we at least have an easier summertime, a springtime to clean up. Because I think a clean city instills pride. Neighborhoods that are clean instill pride, and that's what we need for all of our neighborhoods.
One quick question before I let you go and remind people how to reach out to you. Is race as much of an issue today as it was before? I mean, you note that you represent a predominantly African-American area. It doesn't seem like race is as big of an issue today as it was in the past in Chicago.
No, it's not, but it still becomes. The divisions are there in terms of how housing has been segregated in our city. The foreclosure crisis has really gutted a lot of our west and south sides due to predatory lending, the bundling of and the banks and what caused it. I mean, most of our foreclosures are areas of color and wards of color, and the numbers are still ongoing at this point, and it's causing problems for us across the board and how we deal with it. And so in housing, yes, but people's attitudes towards other people, I think people understand that we are all here to work together to find solutions, and the solutions come from the people, and not from the top down, but from the bottom up. And we all need to expand our middle class, and everybody wants to get into our middle class.
You know, Alderman Bob Fioretti is my guest. He's running for mayor of Chicago. His website is bobfioretti.com, F-I-O-R-E-T-T-I.com. We're going to circulate it because he is one of the first candidates out there. And he's openly said that, you know, and again, we're not talking about Middle East politics. This isn't about what's happening 9,000 miles away. This is about Chicago, which has 450,000 Arabs in the Chicagoland area, 100,000 just still in the city of Chicago. We got a lot of students that are part of the Chicago school system. And Bob Fioretti is the first person who's actually reached out to us to talk to us, to say that, you know, he wants to make sure we're treated just like everybody else. Nobody's asking for any favors from anybody, just to have somebody pay attention. Alderman, we appreciate you coming on board. Any final thoughts? The website, again, is bobfioretti.com. They can contribute. They can support your Facebook page. They can volunteer. They can get email updates. Any final thoughts you want to offer them before we say thank you?
No, and I just think on this holiday, and that many of the families that are listening to this program today, that they're celebrating with prayers and social gatherings, I wish them the best. And together, we will all, by working together with prayer in our social gatherings, we will solve the problems that face this city.
All right. Bob Fioretti, Alderman, the second ward, and candidate for mayor of Chicago. Bob, thank you very much. It's very kind of you to take the time to join us today.
Great to be on the Talk of the Town. I look forward to it again, and after my victory, too.
Yeah, well, listen, that'll be the first time a mayor has said he'd love to come on an American Arab radio show, so thank you for that.
You
Bob, you're a great guy.
Weekend.
We wish you a lot of luck, and we know you're going to do well. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Ray.
All right,
thank
that you. Was Bob Fioretti. He's running for mayor of Chicago, and the first thing he made news, first thing he's going to do, you heard it, Khaled, he's going to reinstitute the Arab Advisory Commission so that American Arabs have a voice at City Hall, one that Rahm Emanuel destroyed. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to reach out and talk to our good friend Richard Silverstein. We are now going to talk about Middle East politics. Richard Silverstein is a phenomenal writer, principled. He talks about what's important. Let's take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll be talking with Richard Silverstein here at Talk of the Town Radio at YahalaVoice.com and the Arab Daily News, WCEV 1450 AM radio, live in Chicago. I'm Ray Hanania. We'll be right back right after these messages.
You have a medical alert device, when you press the button for help, can you talk through your pendant? With many companies, you still have to talk through the base unit, and that's not much help in an emergency. The answer, LifeRun Medical Alert Systems. Simply press the button and talk to a live operator right through the pendant. If your device can't do that, upgrade to LifeRun today. The system is free, the shipping is free, and the monitoring fee is less than a dollar a day. Call LifeRun now at 1-800-421-3366 or order online at LifeRun.com.
Home Life Furniture. آخر صيحات الأثاث وكل ما تحتاج من مفروشات. Home Life Furniture. الأمانة، الأخوة، والدقة في المواعيد.
No credit needed to finance. Everyone is approved at Home Life Furniture. 13449 South Cicero Avenue in Crestwood, Illinois. 708-631-3627. Mention Yehala Voice and your delivery is free. Get $200 off when you spend $1,500.
For years, the hearts of good people have broken for the suffering of the Syrians. More than 6 million displaced, nearly 3 million refugees, 80% are women. Children and elderly have faced growing hunger and deprivation. Syrians need food today. Your charity can help Syrians in need. Feed a Syrian family by donating a $50 food basket through Zakat Foundation of America at zakat.org. or by calling 1-888-ZAKAT-US. Zakat Foundation of America, the leader in empowering lives through Zakat.
منتجات زياد من عائلتنا إلى عائلتكم. أفضل المنتجات الغذائية نوفرها لموائدكم. متطلبات المطبخ العربي نقدمها لكم من خلال ماركاتنا السلطان، كرافت، نستلي، بوك، ريفل بيكان، دانا. ستجدونها في كافة المحلات والبقاليات. للمزيد من المعلومات زوروا موقعنا زياد.com. منتجات زياد من عائلتنا إلى عائلتكم.
Carry Chrysler Jeep Dodge's 72-hour sale starts now. $30 million in inventory, $5 million in discounts, and $25 million to lend will be available for this public sale at Man Carry's Chrysler Jeep Dodge at Oak Lawn. Now through Monday, get $12,000 off MSRP. Get 0% for 72 months, plus a $4,500 rebate. 800 factory cars are on display. Brand new Jeep Cherokees, Grand Cherokees, minivans, Ram trucks, and more. $5 million in discounts will be made available on Man Carry's $30 million of new car inventory. Stop what you're doing right now and get to Man Carries at Oak Lawn. $12,000 off MSRP. 0% for 72 months. Plus $4,500 in rebates. $30 million in inventory. And bank reps on site with $25 million to lend. You will drive today. Hurry. This public sale will absolutely end Monday. Sale hours extended till midnight at Man Carry Chrysler Jeep Dodge on 95th Street, Oak Lawn. On select models, $1,389 per thousand with zero down. With approved credit plus tax, title, license, and doc.
العيد يوم حب وسلام، في العيد يحلو الكلام. من يهلا فويس كل عام وأنتم بخير.
عيد وحب هاي الليلة الناس معيدين، لو انت وياي الليلة العيد بعيدين.
And welcome back to Talk of the Town. I'm Ray Hanania here at WCEV 1450 AM radio live in Chicagoland and also simulcast and broadcast on yahalavoice.com radio live every Friday at 4 o'clock. The show is podcast. It's on iTunes. You can go to our website at thearabdailynews.com and you can go to iTunes and download the podcast also. Tomorrow is Eid al-Adha, the festival of the sacrifice for our Muslim friends. We say Eid Mubarak. Tomorrow is also Yom Kippur. And my, as I point out all the time, my wife and son are Jewish and it's a big holiday for them. So I believe in maybe Richard Silverstein, my guest, can tell me if I'm pronouncing this right. Gemar Hatima Tova. Did I get that right?
Mm-hmm.
All right.
You got it pretty close.
Yeah.
99%.
Most people listening will say, oh, he's Jewish. He's not really Arab anyway. So I hear that. I get it. I get that back there. On the line with me is a great friend of mine. I've known this guy a long time, and he's so ethical about the Middle East issues. He's precise about being fair. And, you know, for most people, that causes a lot of problems. When you tell the truth, a lot of people don't want to hear the truth. He's American, Jewish, and sometimes he's tough on Israel. Sometimes he's tough on the Arabs. But he's always honest and forthright, and not everybody likes that. Richard Silverstein, his website is richardsilverstein.com. Richard, welcome to the show today. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Ray. And this holiday season, I wish all your listeners Eid Mubarak and a Chag Sameach on Yom Kippur.
And you know, that's a great thing. We have a candidate running for mayor of Chicago who says he's going to do something for Arab Americans. And then we have a guest who's Jewish who just wished Muslims an Eid Mubarak. That's pretty big. You know, we don't enjoy that kind of thing in Chicago much. We're under siege here. Richard, I don't know if you've ever been to the city of Chicago. We're not liked.
I have.
Oh, my gosh, it's terrible. Listen, you have a phenomenal blog. I read it all the time. And
thank you.
Just, I could go through every story and point out how phenomenal they are, but I'm wondering, is there one that you think is like something that people should be focused on? What should we be looking at in this Middle East thing? Should we be listening to Netanyahu? Should we be listening to Abbas? Should we be listening to poor Barack Obama, who seems to be sleeping? I don't know what he's doing. You know, I don't know. Yeah. What should we be focused on, do you think?
Well, I think that right now the Middle East is in a, I don't know if I should call it a stupor or in a deep sleep. It doesn't look like there's anything going on that's very constructive or positive. The Kerry peace talks failed, and then we had that terrible war in Gaza.
It was terrible.
2,100 Gazans were killed, and 500 of them were children. And it seems that Bibi Netanyahu has come out of the war in a politically strong position in Israel. He doesn't feel like he has to do anything or give anything, or he's under no pressure whatsoever to change course. He's proposed new settlements and new housing starts in the settlements that are going to poison the well even more than they have been already. And other than expressing dismay, the U.S. has no leverage and no willingness to expend any political capital to change that.
How could the most powerful country in the world have absolutely no influence? And we get, I don't want to say the word, but they B-slap us all the time. Every time we go to Israel and say, hey, can you do us a favor? We give you so much mm-hmm. money, just be nice. We block every anti-Israeli resolution at the U.N., for you. We veto,
right,
we put our
right.
we compromise our ethics and principle for you, and yet they treat us with disrespect. They spy on us. Ridicule us. I don't get it. I don't get it.
Well, you have to look to the Israel lobby and here domestically, huge power and huge campaign funding source for candidates. And that's why Congress is in the pocket of the lobby and of Israel. And, you know, the president realizes that if he wants to have a genuinely honest, fair position on the Middle East, he would have to go up against those interests. And, you know, just look at Obama in terms of whenever there's been a political fight, he's almost never willing to engage in one unless
right.
he knows for sure that he's going to win and not have to expend a lot of capital to do so. So to win, to do the right thing in the Middle East in Israel-Palestine conflict would require an immense amount of capital. There would be huge backlash from the organized Jewish community, by which I mean the sort of wealthy fat cats that run the organizations like the ADL and the American Jewish Committee and AIPAC and groups like that. So he would really have to, you know, roll up his sleeves, get in the trenches, and it would be trench warfare. And he's not willing to do that, simply not willing to do it. And no president, going back to maybe Jimmy Carter or the first George Bush, has been really willing to sit Israel down and tell it, you know, what the story is and what it will have to do. And I'm afraid that the only way that this is going to get better is if somehow the international community is forced to get involved, force Israel and Palestine to some kind of a settlement and impose peacekeepers and observers, you know, inside both countries or on the border to ensure that there will be security and peace, because Israel will not willingly ever, there are a lot of Jews or liberal Zionists who believe that if we just do this or we just do that, or America sort of bends over backwards and is showing sympathy and compassion and whatever, that will finally be the thing that will turn Israel around and there will be a labor enlightened government will be elected and Israel will see the light and it will realize that it has to give Palestine, you know, independence and everything will be hunky-dory. But that's just a pipe dream. That's never going to happen, unfortunately.
Now, you and I think most people familiar with the conflict know exactly what the problems are. You're right. The Israeli lobby is powerful. Just ask Steven Saleta about, you know, people that have wealthy money that they didn't like what he tweeted on Twitter, and they threatened the university, and the university withdrew hiring him, and, you know, now he and his family are out on the street. Nobody cares about him. It was a fight just to get the media to pay attention to it. Yeah. We got the media against us. We got the Israeli lobby. But is it fair, and I always, people yell at me all the time in my community when I bring this up, but I'm American born, and to me it's fundamental. It doesn't seem like American Arabs are doing enough. We're acting like we live in the Middle East. We write and protest as if we're in the Middle East rather than engaging the system, you know, rolling up our sleeves, becoming part of the system, changing it, and really pushing the Israeli extremists out of our, you know, control and the headlock they have us in. Do we do enough, or is that a big fuse that we don't want to light?
Well, I think that the Arab American community is not as well organized as the Jewish community, and that could have a lot of reasons.
Am I wrong for bringing that up, do you think?
I think that this is the way power is exerted in American politics. Right. You know, there's lobbies and there's corporate lobbies and there's ethnic lobbies and there's national lobbies. I mean, look at all the foreign countries that hire our lobbyists in Washington to lobby for them. All the tyrants and authoritarian leaders. Everybody's hiring a lobbyist and everybody's got their own particular
set of interests. Except us, right? Except the Arabs.
There is nothing whatsoever wrong with Arabs organizing, and there are some, you know, national organizations that exist, but, you know, they're not nearly, look at AIPAC's budget, $70 million a year.
Right.
And if you compare it to ADC, you compare it to, the other name of the big organ, CARE, and groups like that, you know, we're talking a couple of $1 million for each one, if that. So, you know,
it's just survival mode, right? Isn't that what we're really in survival mode? There are a few organizations in Washington, maybe, you know, but we have no real influence. I mean, Barack Obama is probably the most understanding person of the Palestinian cause. I knew him when he was in Chicago. He knew us as Palestinians, but he also knows what it's like to stand up to the Israeli lobby. They beat the heck out of him.
Yeah.
And it sounds like he's gun shy. He's afraid, isn't he?
Yeah. No, he is. Once you become president, you're wrapped in a cocoon with all these advisors and all these pollsters and political, hands who are telling
you. Who's going to build his library for him in Hyde Park, right?
There you go.
Isn't that what he's thinking about and all those different things? You know,
absolutely. He's thinking about his legacy. And, you know, I mean, I think at one point in his presidency, he thought part of his legacy would be solving the Middle East conflict. But, he's not going to be able to do it unless he has a radically different perspective on what needs to be done now. You know,
and yet they hate him, though. Isn't that true? I mean, Netanyahu despises this guy.
And they still hate him. I mean, if you're in Israel and you're even in the center of the political you're centrist in Israel. You're hated by the people on the right. There's no kind of, I mean, obviously there's a lot of confrontation and polemics in our politics here, right. But in Israel it's much, much, much worse.
But is it agreed, you know, do you think, that we need to do more? Don't we? I mean, we're not poor.
Absolutely.
American Arabs are
absolutely
wealthy. We are probably, yeah, among the wealthiest people in this country, yet when it comes to our politics, we look like we're in poverty. But the truth is,
yeah,
we're wealthy. We just don't use it. We're not doing it the right way.
You know, I think that Arab Americans are in a position that Jews might have been in, you know, 80 years ago, which is that they're still a little gun-shy about exerting their power, about publicly expressing their ethnicity, celebrating your ethnicity in public. I mean, Arab Americans tend to be a little bit, you know, private about things like that. They're worried legitimately about Islamophobia, about or Arabophobia, whatever you want to call it, about expressing themselves publicly and taking the kind of abuse that we've seen that's possible in this country. But eventually, Arab Americans need to come out and express themselves and celebrate their identity, their, you know, whether it's religious or ethnic or cultural, and be, you know, be out about it and be bold about it, and, you know, let the chips fall where they may. The rest of America is going to have to get used to the fact that we have Arab Americans, and, you know, they have a contribution to make to our society.
The day I stepped out of the uniform after serving during the Vietnam War, the FBI opened a case on me because I wrote a letter to the newspaper saying that in the 2 years that I was serving, during, it was the most unbelievable, unfair system to Arabs and Muslims. And they opened an investigation. They investigated me for almost three years. And I don't even know who they talked to that were no longer my friends. So you're right. And that was back in the 70s where we were being,
yeah,
intimidated. So you're right. It's like, but we should get over that, can't we? Can't we put,
yeah,
our muscle,
yeah,
together? You know what it's like when you work with us. You put two Arabs together and we're fighting. You invited me on.
Yeah.
You did a great video thing a while back. And someone just went after me and I didn't even know her. I think,
yeah,
it was Gaza Mom. She was mad at me because I said that there was still hope that we might have peace. Do you still think there's,
right,
any hope for a two-state solution?
Well, Ray, that's a tough question. I know we may have.
Is it worth still fighting for? It doesn't matter if we disagree. We can still.
I
know what I mean.
I,
I'm not going to beat you up.
Yeah, no, we're still friends about it. I'm not going to attack you like Gaza Mom did.
Right.
But here's what I think, Ray. I think that we had a chance for the two-state solution.
Right.
I think Israel could have gotten a two-state solution if it had been willing to
return. It was for their benefit, wasn't it? Really?
Absolutely.
When you think about it,
absolutely,
it wasn't even to the benefit of Palestinians. It was for
Israel,
and they rejected it.
And they rejected it because they'd rather have a whole loaf than half a loaf.
Can they get the whole loaf? Do you think they're going to get the whole loaf?
I don't think in the long term they will. I believe history, you know, is just in the long term. The question is, you know, how are we going to get to where we need to be to have justice? And, you know, I hate to think that it might require some kind of, you know, really horrible event. I mean, not that Operation Protective Edge wasn't horrible, but the
even
world
worse
seems sleepy and,
right,
and catatonic when it comes to morality, and doesn't act until, you know, 100,000 people are dead, or, you know, like in Iraq or Syria or places like that. And even then, with 190,000 people dead in Syria, we're just, you know, beginning to think about taking action there. So I am very downbeat about the possibilities. I think Israeli politics is stuck in reverse.
I was going to ask you about that Marav Zonshine, I think is her name. Did I?
Yeah.
She took a beating.
Oh, yeah.
She wrote about how the Israeli society now are beating up on progressives and liberals,
right,
and
right,
just trying to have a discussion, you can be attacked.
Right,
you know,
and she's a liberal Zionist. She's not even a radical in Israeli terms. So if a liberal Zionist, I don't know if we need to define the terms, but, you know, it's somebody who's moderate in Israeli political context. If something like that is going to get beaten up for stating the obvious. I mean, what hope is there for Israeli politics as a whole? I mean, the nationalist, ultra-nationalist settlers, the right-wing religious, you know, the ultra-Orthodox people, they own Israel. They own Israeli politics. Yeah, there are people there, there are Mayrav Sonshines, the 972 magazines, you know, we could list all the names of all the good people in Israel who are putting up a
they're
good fight.
They're getting smaller and smaller.
And they are, and a lot of them are emigrating probably to places like Chicago or Berlin because they're so discouraged about what's going on in Israel, or they don't want to raise their kids to have to serve in all the wars that, that their leaders serve up to them, like Gaza and Lebanon and whatever else. So, you know, they see what the future holds, and they say, no, I think, you know, I've got a degree, advanced degree. I got something in high tech I can do. I'm going to go to Silicon Valley. I'm going to go to Germany. I'm going to go wherever. And I've got a future there for myself. And if I stay here, my kids are going to serve in the army, and one of them is going to get killed, you know, by Hezbollah or by Hamas or whoever. What kind of future is that? You know, so, I mean, I think Israel really has only itself to blame. It's not an easy situation by any means, but I mean, how long can you sit back and say, Israel, when are you going to do the right thing?
You take a beating yourself, don't you, from the American Jewish community, and, you know, you called all kinds of names and, you know.
Absolutely, you know. Yeah, and you know, my website has been hacked by an Israeli hacker and defaced, and you know, I've had denial of service attacks on my website. You know, I'm a target. You know, people like to spread all sorts of nasty rumors. I don't even want to say the things they accuse me of, which are obviously completely, you know, bogus.
Right.
But this is what these people need to do. They need to smear their opponents and not have an honest debate with them because they're afraid of that. But they need to call them pedophiles. They need to say they've been arrested. They need to say they've been, you know, once somebody said, I was arrested for welfare fraud.
They're just going to throw mud. Listen, they do that to me all the time. I get attacked from the extreme on the Arab side and the extreme on the Israeli side. That guy, David Horowitz, he's gone after every client I've had, and he said that you have hired an anti-Semite who wants to kill Jews. That was the Jackie Mason thing. No, I mean, it's like, come on, are you kidding me? You know, is that, but it tells you how desperate they are, because we must be right when they have to go to those extremes to try to distort, to destroy us, right?
Yeah, they're both ignorant and afraid. And it, the combination of ignorance and fear is very, very potent. In Israel, you've got people who are still reliving the Holocaust and still thinking that the next thing that's going to happen to them is going to be, you know, a modern version of the Holocaust. They're still afraid that the Arabs are going to try to destroy Israel. They're living in the past and can't get out of the trauma. And, you know, I think people like David Horowitz are much more malevolent because
he's vicious. The guy is vicious. But I don't shy away from it. I fight back. Anybody that calls me a name, I just go after him because I figure, you know what? I'm going to make it fun. They can say whatever they want about I am just going to enjoy it. I don't care. Listen, Richard, let me ask you a question. If you were to give American Arabs advice on what they should do, what would you tell them to do? What should we be doing from your perspective to help strengthen the movement to help the Palestinians and Israelis achieve peace?
Well, what I would do is I would study what the Jews have done. I'm not saying to do everything that we've done, but I would study how AIPAC was founded in 1951 by this guy named Cy Kennan, who, you know, was in a one guy in a little office, and built it into this empire. And follow the lessons. I mean, it is going to require a huge amount of money. So I think that Arab Americans,
we need to put money up, don't we?
You need money.
Don't we need PR and communications?
Absolutely. You need
Americans need to hear our story. They still don't even know who we are. We've been living with them for 180 years.
Instead of having, you know, one Jim Zogby, you need 100 Jim Zogbys out there.
You know, Jim won't even appear with me on a program. I was brought on a program in Washington, and when he found out that I was going to be on the panel, he disappeared. You know, that's the kind of that's the kind of problem we have. And, you know, he's hated the way the same people that hate him hate me. And we don't even get together. Yeah. You know, it's just like, that's the problem. But we need to get our message out, and we don't do a good job of it. You do a better job, I think. The Electronic Intifada does a great job, I think. There are a lot of places, but it's still not strong enough.
No, no, it's not. And so you need these people coming up with money, deciding, you know, which groups they're going to put their money behind and turn that group into the kind of group that represents your politics. And you need grassroots doing it as well. You need people willing to, you need networks in every major city where there's Arab Americans. I want to just tell you something that astounded me. This is one of my blog posts. An Israeli TV station, one of the most popular in Israel, did a news segment. They sent a reporter to Dearborn, Michigan, and he did a segment on Dearborn. It was the most Islamophobic, ridiculous segment that I've ever heard. He interviewed one imam who told him that he thought that violence was close, without specifying what that meant. He went back to Israel and presented Dearborn as a hotbed of Islamic terrorism.
And then the FBI declared it the terrorist center of the United States.
Yeah,
probably because of that visit. Listen,
it's the second. Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say we only got 5 minutes left, 4 minutes left. I want to just remind listeners it's 708-321-1313 is our number. I got to have you on again, Richard. You know, these 30 minutes sounds like a lot, but it goes by fast. And you know,
it
we
does.
Should have our own. If I were in charge, you know what I'd do? I'd buy a paper like the New York Times and I'd Arabize it.
Yeah,
I'd just be open.
Yeah, well,
tomorrow
you
I'd
know,
put on.
Sheldon Adelson bought Israel Today in Israel. He invests $40 million a year.
Why don't we do that? Why don't we have an Arab sheikh that does that named Sheikh Sheldon Adelson? You know, Abdullah Adelson. Isn't there an Abdullah Adelson in the Middle East who can put up $40 million and buy a newspaper? And I'll tell you, you know what else we can do? Rahm Emanuel is mayor of Chicago. He's been so anti-Arab. He shut down everything that the Arabs have done. He served in the Israeli military. He didn't even serve in the U.S. military. He gets mad when I bring it up. I was a City Hall reporter, won't even let me interview him. We should be out in force in that election, shouldn't we?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. If you can mobilize the Arab Americans in Chicago and get them out to vote for your candidate, Rahm will start paying attention to you. He's not stupid. Same thing with Obama. If the Arabs in the United States had the networks throughout the United States that Jews do, his position in the Middle East would be different. You know?
Yeah, but we would have to muscle. You know, we'd have to muscle up. We'd have to take our arm and make a muscle. And make a difference. You know, I got to have you on again, Richard, maybe in another couple of weeks, because it's fun just talking to you. I don't think Arabs have this kind of dialogue. We don't communicate with each other, with people like you who support us. Every day you put yourself out on the line to defend American Arabs and the Arab world and the Palestinian cause, and you're American Jewish, and you take a beating for it. We should be helping you. We should be supporting you. Let's take a real quick call because I don't want to ever say that we don't have any time for callers. Although it's a fast show. Go ahead, caller. You're on with Richard Silverstein. His website is richardsilverstein.com. Go ahead.
I'll check that out. Ray, this is Seamus Burke.
Hey, all right, good guy. A good Irish American Arab. We love you.
Yeah.
I know exactly who you are and we want you back here. Quick, you got
well,
a quick
second.
I wanted
to remind you guys of something.
Yes.
When Obama was in conversation with Sarkozy, he had an open mic gaffe where he said, yeah, he's a liar and I've got to deal with him every day. And I'll have more freedom to, you know, work on this policy after my reelection. Well, he's been reelected. But now are we waiting for something after the midterms if he does well, which it's not looking that great for him, is it?
No, it's not.
He was talking about Bibi Netanyahu, I think. I don't know if you mentioned that.
Right, he was.
Yeah, and you know what? Go ahead.
Everybody knows that Bibi is a liar. Everybody knows he's untrustworthy. He's a conniver. everybody knows you can't trust this guy, but you know what? Nobody calls him on it.
All right.
They let him get away with murder.
Seamus Burke, I got to say thank you for calling, and we appreciate you listening. We're down to the last few seconds here. Richard Silverstein, thank you so much for joining us today. Richard's website is richardsilverstein.com. We have a link to it on our website at thearabdailynews.com. Thank you so much, you guys. I appreciate it. Richard, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks a lot, Ray, and Happy New Year to everybody in Chicago.
All right. Thank you very much.
And thanks for having me on again.
Hey, we love you. We need you out here, okay, Seamus? We need that Arab-Irish.
All right, I'll
That's
work
a tough
it.
Combination. All right, you guys, you take it easy. I'm Ray Hanania here at Talk of the Town. It's 5 o'clock and we got to go. We got some great programs coming up, and Nasreen Balut is on. She has a great voice and I love listening. I always want to call in and win something, but I'm not sure. I know I'll make a fool out of myself, so I don't call in, but you don't make a fool of yourself. You guys call in. Khalid, thank you for running the board. I'm Ray Hanania. Our website again is yahalavoice.com or thearabdailynews.com. Go to either one. You can get information on our show. I'll see you next Friday. We'll talk to you then. Have a great Eid al-Adha and, even Yom Kippur. You guys have a great weekend. We'll see you later. Bye bye, everybody.
Community, one hand, one voice. The Arab voice is heard with Yahala Voice.